Here's Andy Udman.
Scientists from around the country have staged rallies to protest federal government cuts to scientific programs and the so-called muzzling of government scientists. Even the New York Times chimed in with an editorial last month. Is science being silenced in Canada?
Scientists, you know, by their nature, not the sort of people who generally get together and chant in the street, but really, I think that moment, that sense that you know, there was just this relentless attack coming at them from a federal government that no longer seemed to want their or value their work.
The War on Science. There's a catchy title. We'll talk to the author, Chris Turner, in just a moment. But I want to tell you as we begin this hour about the War on Science, related to the issue that we want to talk about this morning, and that is this book, The War on Science. Joining me this morning, as usual, on Thursday morning at 10 o'clock, Pam Colleen. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Andy.
The War on Science. Now, science is a good word, right? I checked. The problem is, you've said over and over and over and over again, is we're not getting it.
No, we're not getting correct science today for a large part. So when you hear the words on the 6 o'clock news, according to a new study, this is probably a study that has been done for marketing-based purposes. So the facts have been twisted, unfortunately, in many, many cases today. And I'm not saying there isn't good science out there. There is good science out there. But there's also the absence of science that is an issue as well. And that's where we're cloaking the possibility of learning important things about environmental stewardship, environmental toxicity, and so on. We need to know these things so that we can better protect the environment, and we're not getting some of this science.
Scientists love to work in the lab. They're not so keen on being in the media. They're not so keen on doing things like protests, but we have now seen scientists so frustrated at not being able to get their research out literally having a war declared on them by the likes of Stephen Harper, that they are holding, what, a mock funeral?
They had a mock funeral and buried science in a coffin. I mean, it's the death of science. There was a survey that was done, and it says that 74% of federal scientists believe that in the last 5 years, the sharing of scientific research findings with the public has become too restricted. So we're just not getting the facts, Andy.
Joining us this morning, the author. He's an author. He's a journalist. Chris Turner wrote the book, The War on Science. Chris, welcome to London, Ontario this morning.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Your home base is Alberta, correct?
That's correct. I'm in Calgary.
You're in Calgary. Well, it's interesting that you should be in Calgary, that we're going to be talking about Stephen Harper. Stephen Harper's on a plane this morning heading for Calgary, as so many Tories are. Now, here's the deal he wants to make with you, Chris. He will listen to everything you have to say about his war on science, and he'll even take you to Starbucks and spend an hour if you can somehow find a way to get this motion through the Senate today to give the boot to Mike Duffy, Pamela Wallin, and Patrick Brazeau. Do we have a deal, Chris?
That does sound like a terrific deal. The tricky part is my influence in the Senate is quite limited.
Okay. We'll have to work.
But certainly, I would love to sit with the Prime Minister and talk for a little bit about some of the facts that he's missing.
Stephen Harper right now does not need more flack, but you're going to give him more flack this morning. You've written a book called The War on Science. Why that title?
Well, what I wanted to do with this book, I think, was put together all of these sort of different threads that were going on in this discussion about government science, its role in decision making, its role in policy making, and you know, really, I think, you know, get a little attention on this, and you know, as you mentioned off the top, the Death of Evidence March last year in Ottawa was sort of the beginning of this, and I think the intensity of the protest and the fact that, you know, it was a mock funeral for evidence indicates that this is a pretty significant assault on what scientists do, whether it be, you know, the scientists who are being told they can't speak out, or, you know, communicate with the media, communicate with the public about their work, or, you know, some of the sweeping cuts to environmental stewardship and basic science research that were buried in a budget bill last year, all the way to, you know, the just general disdain for expert advice on policy making and you know, basically using science where necessary to back up policy rather than the other way around.
Let's illustrate. Let's take one of the hottest issues in the country right now, an issue that we have talked about on this show, but which the public is still trying to wrap their minds around. But it's one that led to a violent conflict in New Brunswick just a couple of weeks ago, fracking. On this show, we have looked at fracking in southwestern Ontario. And Pam, there are some really interesting theories about what impact we are already seeing in southwestern Ontario.
Some theories.
On the impact of fracking.
Well, and if they are fracking here in Ontario, and we don't really know that yet, but there are a couple of companies that are buying up some of the shale deposit lands in southern Ontario. But if they are fracking, the solvents that they use to extract the gas from this shale are extremely toxic. And we're seeing lots of these algae blooms or algae blobs in Lake Erie. And so theoretically, that could be contributing to the problem in Lake Erie that we're seeing, if they are indeed fracking. But we're seeing problems with the water supply anywhere where they're fracking, period.
And it's so important, Chris, that we have this algae blob, which we have seen in Lake Erie near Windsor, which is threatening their water supply and soon could be threatening the water supply here in London, Ontario. And we want to know, what is the science? What is causing this? How much of a threat is it? The question is, when you come along with a book like The War on Science, are we ever going to get the truth about fracking and its impact on basic issues like the water we drink from Lake Erie?
Well, and that's a great example of the exact sort of thing that, you know, until some of these cuts occurred, the Canadian government was doing a pretty good job of. I mean, one of the most contentious cuts in last year's budget was the Experimental Lakes area in northern Ontario, which does precisely the kind of research you're describing. I mean, this was the research facility. It's 58 actual lakes where scientists can go and change the chemistry of an entire lake to see the impact of large-scale industrial activity. This is where we figured out that, you know, industrial phosphates were causing algae blooms back in the 1970s. This is where we figured out how acid rain worked, and it's where, you know, international action on acid rain began. You know, the impact of things like fracking, exactly the sort of thing that the Experimental Lakes does with its research, and that was, you know, a pittance from the federal government's point of view, $2 million a year to fund it, you know, not even a fraction of their ad budget every year, and yet, you know, that facility was basically sent packing. It's got, you know, been somewhat carried on now by the Ontario government and by an NGO, but you know, that's the kind of research that this government has decided they're just not interested in doing.
So see no evil, hear no evil, essentially is their motto.
Yeah, well, in particular where, you know, there's lucrative resource extraction to be done. So if you look at the pattern of the kind of cuts, there has been some pretty significant change across the board. You'll see change, you know, things like the National Research Council that are not that closely related to environmental science and stewardship and that sort of thing. But really the target is, you know, all of that sort of pesky research and regulation that, you know, slows the progress of industry as far as this government's concerned. So rather than, you know, get the best available evidence and figure out what the actual impact is going to be before we go, you know, doing large-scale oil extraction and building pipelines across the country, let's just, you know, keep that stuff quiet, make hay where the sun shines, and worry about it on at a later date.
Chris, I want to ask you about a specific area, and I'll ask Pam to set this up. Well, one of the focuses we have on this show is the information and the instructions for our local medical officer of health that we get from Health Canada. Pam, summarize some of the discussions that we've had about the contaminated research that Health Canada so often bases its decisions on.
Oh, we've seen it for decades, Andy. Everything from wherever it's DDT, mercury, Vioxx. I mean, we're just seeing decision
fluoride.
After decision. Fluoride. You know, we're just seeing for years mishaps happening based on Health Canada turning a blind eye on a lot of the toxicity we're exposed to today.
Chris, we're having a lively discussion in this city on fluoride, as so many cities are having. The approach of our city council is, we're not experts, so we simply take our marching orders from the Middlesex London Health Unit, where they even refuse to read in full Dr. Paul Conant's book on the impact of fluoride on our drinking water, which is a very, very alarming book. They simply say, we got to rely on the health unit. The health unit takes their marching orders from Health Canada, and now you're saying Health Canada doesn't... has a real hard time getting real science, and their agenda is fully influenced by the agenda of industry.
Right, and I think that's gets at the larger kind of long-term impact of this war on science that this government is carrying out, which is that it really does erode the public trust and the public confidence in rulings on things like, you know, like fluoridation in our water. That's actually an issue that's been quite a hot topic here in Calgary as well, where in fact our city council voted last year, I believe it was, to remove fluoride from our water. I think there's strong arguments on either side, but that's really why the federal government got into the business of basic scientific research and data gathering in the first place, was to be able to be, to bring, the best scientific minds in on contentious issues like this and be able to say, well, here's, as good a picture as we can give you of what the science is telling us. And
Chris,
I think now that we know that science is in play, that it's being heavily politicized, it's very difficult to know who's got the right information.
Chris, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you this. What Stephen Harper got against science? We'll be back with author Chris Turner in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Okay, so here's the question for our guest this morning, Chris Turner, author, journalist, author of the book The War on Science. Chris Turner, what Stephen Harper, poor guy who's having such a rough day and now you're piling on, what Stephen Harper got against science?
I think, the conclusion I come to in the book is that, Stephen Harper and his inner circle really do believe that a lot of the sort of tradition of environmental stewardship and regulation on industry is ultimately, a nuisance, a barrier to economic growth, a barrier to more rapid resource development across the country. And they really seem to believe, fundamentally, this just isn't what government is for. Government should be helping industry along, funding scientists who want to help various businesses, get their products to market and do some R&D and research innovation around technology, but really should get out of the business of basic research. We shouldn't be out there, counting fish and figuring out what happens to them if you disrupt their environment. That's just not what government is
for.
Well,
let's talk about that. Brings up another example of nanotechnology, where scientists are asking the government to do more research because there's evidence to show that the nanotechnology that is being put out into the environment today is having adverse effects on fish, for example. And yet it seems to me that the money is going towards the actual development of nanotechnology and its products, but not looking at any potential adverse effects from putting these tiny nanoparticles out into the environment.
Right. And another perfect example of what, the kind of research that the Experimental Lake Area is known for. In fact, there was an ongoing experiment in the impact of nanoparticles on freshwater lakes, going on at the moment that facility was defunded. So it's exactly the kind of research they do. And in fact, I would point out it's the kind of research that only, in some cases, the federal government will do. Businesses are pretty good at, if there's a market to be found and there's money to be made, business will invest in their own R&D. They will create products and innovate and get stuff to market. They're not going to do the due diligence to find out what the impact on public health and on our natural environment is. And that's where government really needs to be focusing its resources.
Okay, I feel Chris, as if we're all guinea pigs out here, Andy.
We're coming down to the bottom of the hour. We have to take a short break. When we come back, Chris, we want to ask you the top three ways in which we as a society, because to some people who are listening to this morning, they say, well, their eyes are sort of glazing over. How does that impact me? I want to ask you the three top ways in which you think the government's war on science, as you call it, which prompted this mock funeral by the guys in white coats, scientists who are very frustrated in this area. What are the top three ways in which that is hurting all of us? All in the next half hour right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Scientists from around the country have staged rallies to protest federal government cuts to scientific programs and the so-called muzzling of government scientists. Even the New York Times chimed in with an editorial last month. Is science being silenced in Canada?
Scientists, by their nature, not the sort of people who generally get together and chant in the street, but really, I think that moment, that sense that there was just this relentless attack coming at them from a federal government that no longer seemed to want their or value their work.
Andy Udman in, along with Pam Killeen, with author Chris Turner. Chris, I want to start the segment, for those who have just joined us, saying, Chris, you've written a book called The War on Science. Darn it, we're getting awfully frustrated trying to get real answers, scientific answers to, let's take four very, very pressing issues right now. This week, we have done a three-part series on wireless radiation, the radiation coming from our cell phones and microwave towers. We have an airline pilot who had to leave her career last March, has had to leave the city of London. She's now living in the Grand Bend area. Now they've built a tower there. And we're so frustrated trying to get real answers about how significant this issue is. Pam gave a talk last night at her boot camp and told these young people, our kids won't be able to have kids because of some of these issues. That's what you said, right, Pam?
Well, that's a big threat. I mean, in terms of our fertility and our own overall health. And when you look at what we're up against in terms of the food supply, environmental toxicity, I mean,
and there we go.
David and Goliath battle.
People call me every week after Pam's on and say, "Go, you got the crazy lady on again," you know? and yet now we're starting to see the mainstream media pick up on some of these issues. We got the huge algae blob out in Lake Erie. I don't see our health department holding a news conference to warn us about that and give us some real answers about why that's happening. And we're having this debate about the fluoride issue. Chris, why can't we get real science on these very pressing issues?
Well, I think, you know, what we're seeing here is, you know, an increasing disdain, certainly from the federal government, as I talk about in the book, for that basic scientific research that would, you know, begin to give us some clear answers to these sorts of things. This is absolutely one of the primary roles of government. I mean, going all the way back to the very first, you know, research and meteorological stations that were built, you know, at the start of the 20th century, government, you know, is the only institution that can do some of this long-term monitoring. And, you know, there's a reason our weather reports all start with Environment Canada. They're the only ones that have the capacity to do that sort of thing. And that's really, I think, the risk to the general public about this is, you know, where we know far less about basic facts of the world we live in. We're reducing that. It's eroding the public trust in the government and by extension its scientists by, you know, heavily politicizing these issues. You know, we don't know who to trust, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there are scientific watchdog groups out there. There's the Union of Concerned Scientists. There's the Institute of Science and Society. Europe has REACH, another organization trying to oversee science. What can consumers do, though? I mean, this information is just not trickling down to the consumers. What can consumers do to try and get more integrity returned to science vis-a-vis the government?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the first thing, obviously, as trite as it sounds, is talk to your local MP and say, you know what, this is simply not acceptable. Whichever party you represent, science has to be sacrosanct to some degree. We created a, you know, arm's length civil service to you know, determine the basic facts before we start changing policy. You've got to start listening to them again. So, you know, that I think is the first step. The second step is, you know, you can get involved in this response. There are organizations such as Evidence for Democracy, which is an organization of scientists who are getting together basically to combine their voices and say, you know what, we need to stand up for science. We need to be defending the scientific record.
I'm shocked that your first piece of advice was go to your MPP when it's the politicians who seem to be the problem, Chris.
Well, it is, but I mean, I believe, you know, to some degree what they're doing is for short-term political gain. They see an advantage to you know, appearing to be strong on economic issues and difficult economic times and all that kind of thing. But if they're hearing back from constituents, lots of them, you know what, this is, you know, yes, we want a strong economy, but not, you know, at the expense of you know, basic knowledge of our world. That does have an impact.
We're quickly running out of time, so I have to jump in and ask you this. In what three areas do we really, really need to be concerned about what you're saying about this war on science? In what three dramatic ways is this war hurting us?
Well, I think number one is just that basic picture of our world. This is, you know, organizations like the Experimental Lakes Area, some of the other, you know, environmental monitoring and scientific research organizations that have been, you know, reduced or altered by this war. We know less about what our world looks like. And, you know, everything from the weather report on down, that's really, really important information in our daily lives. So that's number one. I would say number two is that, you know, it has the potential to make our world fundamentally less safe. I mean, you know, when health issues, pollution issues pop up, we do expect the government to have the capacity to tell us what's happening and what to do about it, and they're reducing that capacity. And then probably the third way, although maybe not quite so directly, is that Canada, you know, and Canadians, I think, have long prided themselves on being responsible environmental stewards, about, you know, caring deeply about these issues. And we now, you know, to ourselves and to the world, look like we've abandoned that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention just before Pam directs us to where we can get more information about what you're saying. In just a moment, we're going to be talking to W5's Avis Favreau about a piece that she's doing this weekend on a connection between a swine flu vaccine and the early onset of narcolepsy. Why is it we're relying on the media instead of our health authorities to get to the truth about some of these very pressing health issues? And often when a program like W5 goes to the authorities in charge, they won't talk to them.
Right. And I mean, that unwillingness to speak is certainly characteristic of this government. One of the things that this war on science has done is really make government officials in every department at every level of government deeply reluctant to say anything to the press, to say anything to the public. There's this, you know, top-down message discipline. All of it must support whatever, you know, the Prime Minister's office's current goals are. And what that does is make it very, very difficult for people who might have the right information to be able to communicate to the public what's going on. And so the media comes in to fill that role and can't even get straight answers.
Now, speaking of communicating with the public, you have some speaking engagements coming up here in Ontario. November 7th, you're going to be speaking in Guelph. November 8th and 9th, you're speaking in Toronto. November 27th, you're speaking in Hamilton. And people can find out more information on your website, which is just www.canadaswaronscience.com. So they can get more details there, correct?
Absolutely. And not only can they get more details on you know, my work, but there's also a part of the website where they can write in if you are a, you know, government scientist or you work in the scientific field and you want to leave a record of how the government's abandonment of science has impacted you. There's space for that on the site as well.
Fantastic.
Chris, appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely a pleasure. Have
okay.
a good
morning.
Thanks, Chris.
Folks, you got to hear what's coming up next. You got to watch W5 on the weekend. Avis Favreau from London, Ontario, CTV's medical correspondent, looks at a potential connection between a swine flu vaccine and the early onset of narcolepsy in children. You're saying, wait a minute, I thought Pam Colleen made all this stuff up. Well, no. There is growing evidence, mainstream media starting to catch on. Avis Favreau will talk to us in just a moment. Don't miss it. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. And again, a bit more because I'm going to get a lot of phone calls and email about our guest this morning.
Chris Turner, his website is canadaswaronscience.com, canadaswaronscience.com. And his book is called The War on Science. And if people are interested in going to hear him speak, he's going to be in Guelph on November 7th, in Toronto on November 8th and 9th, and he's going to be speaking in Hamilton on November 27th.
Okay.
So.
Terrific.
Fantastic information from him.
Well,
something more has to be done because we're just being, if you look at, we've talked about Dr. John Ioannidis and his research and how he's saying, you know, 90% of the science we're hearing today is flawed. It's done for commercial reasons only. And the, you know, the vaccine industry, the drug industry, the nanotechnology industry, the biotechnology industry, these industries all are very good at creating their own customized science. And when they present that science to the government, they're underfunded. So they don't necessarily do their own due diligence.
And the frustrating thing is the poor person in the middle with information coming from two sides, you know, the likes of you on a host of issues like fluoride, like wireless radiation, like the blob in Lake Erie and so many of these other issues. They say, well, just give me the science. What is the science?
Yeah, but the critics are going to adversely affect the profits, the bottom line of a lot of the industry out there today. So what Chris was alluding to, you know, government doesn't want to get in the way of industry. But what about our environment? What about our health?
What about
health? We're not really seeing a lot of great strides happening. Unfortunately, it's very tragic.
Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, coming up after the 11 o'clock news, what is more scary on this last day of October? Is it Halloween or is it your hydro rates?